You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. John, how are you doing today? Opening day finally is here.
Yeah, the Twins are on pace for 162-0. So
yeah, so are the Mets, baby. So are the Mets.
Yeah, feeling good. No, it's good to have baseball back. It was nice to have MLB TV up yesterday, just catching four different games and all the highlights, all the low lights. Yeah, it's good to be back. I'm excited.
Yeah, I had a little bit of 4x4 baseball action on MLB TV, watching the Mets on TV, watching four other teams. It's pretty cool. It's glad to be back into the grind of baseball season because it is so much fun, at least for me.
Yeah, I will say, like, once the Twins game started, I kind of just was watching that. But pitch clock was surprisingly nice. It just felt like there was constant stuff going on during the game, and I'm sure a lot of people are saying, you know, talking about the pitch clock and in other podcasts and whatnot, but I enjoyed the fact that these games are kind of going by pretty quick.
Yeah, my favorite part about the whole pitch clock thing is that every announcer, because they're all older, are calling it the shot clock. So that was very fun to hear every single announcer go, oh yeah, the pitch clock. It was literally every time. I don't understand it. But yeah, I really liked the pacing. It felt natural and good. Obviously, it's moving a little fast, and sometimes we see those violations and stuff that can cause some problems, but I think it's going to be a good thing overall.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't really notice too much with the, you know, the adjustments and the shift, although Joey Gallo did come up to bat, and the Royals ended up putting MJ Melendez in short right instead of, you know, obviously where the shortstop used to be in the old shift. So some teams are still trying to play with the shift here a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how they how defenses react to that rule ban, if they're going to be more willing to have, you know, two outfielders out there in the field and have, you know, one outfielder come in to, you know, the short outfielder, or if they're willing to just have that space open and, you know, have a guy just hit through that first or second base hole.
Yeah, the shift is actually really interesting to follow because I saw an exact side-by-side of a pretty similar Jeff McNeil hit where one was literally a ground out right to a player and the other one snuck through two defenders diving in both directions. So I think it's going to make a huge difference. Obviously, we knew that going in, that it's going to benefit some players like Corey Seager, Joey Gallo, Jeff McNeil. There's a lot of players that will benefit from it, but I think we're starting to see that benefit come to life already, and even bigger than we thought.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, just the first game of the season. We'll see how teams, you know, evolve over the season, and also how batters evolve over the season, right? Because now batters have to kind of get used to the fact that there's just a giant hole there. Well, it's not that giant, but, you know, there's a hole there between first and second base for all those batters. So will be interesting to see how that develops over the season.
Yeah, it's giant compared to what was there before, which was absolutely nothing. So
yeah, exactly.
In comparison, it's really big. But yeah, no, a lot of the cool rules going on already in MLB. So exciting stuff. But before we get into this episode, I'd like to remind all of you that you could follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. We're on all of them, so make sure that you subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to us. But as we were talking about earlier, John, how was your opening day? Did you watch the whole Twins game? I know you're 1-0, but how did the Twins look? How'd it go?
Yeah, New Look Twins looked really good. I caught most of the game. Pablo Lopez was looking real nice. We'll talk about him a little bit later, but suffice to say that that velocity increase that a lot of people were seeing in the World Baseball Classic, that's a real thing. He is throwing harder this season, so that'll be cool. It was kind of a low-scoring game, though. It was only 2-0. And came off a Byron Buxton triple off Zach Greinke, and then Trevor Larnach, who is subbing in because multiple players are out. Alex Kirilloff, for one, is on the IL, and so Larnach took his place. Didn't exactly took his place. Gallo switched to first base, and then Larnach played left. But he had his first RBI of the season. Just a fun, you know, close game. It was. Johan Duran looked real good. And yeah, excited for how the rest of the season is going to go. How about you?
Yeah, the Mets played very well against the Marlins. I really like how we worked Sandy Alcantara. We worked the pitch counts really well. We made him go a little deep. He had four walks, which was very uncharacteristic of Sandy Alcantara. So the Mets did really well piecing together hits and making the most out of opportunities. We didn't choke in any clutch moments. I really like what we did, and I think the most impressive thing out of everything, like Scherzer had a quality start. He went six, gave up three runs, but I think the most impressive thing was the bullpen. The bullpen looked really good. Obviously, we don't have Edwin Diaz due to the WBC injury, but man, the bullpen looked great. Drew Smith, Brooks Raley, and David Robertson looked amazing. David Robertson did get the save for anyone who is looking to vulture some saves there. So the Mets closer looks to be David Robertson, but we don't know officially yet. He just got the first crack, but they looked really good.
Yeah, Robertson looks legit. Like, I mean, he was obviously the trivia in terms of the first guy to record a save last year with the Cubs. But he did look good last year in that role. So having him, you know, originally being the setup man, but you know, potentially being the closer for the Mets is kind of a nice luxury to have.
Yeah, I really liked the signing when we originally signed David Robertson, even just as a setup man to Edwin Diaz. I was like, man, I really like that. I wanted the Mets to get him when he was available before the Phillies got him and the Cubs got him. Like, I wanted the Mets to sign him when he was available, and it's great to have him now, and he is stepping into that role for Edwin Diaz really nicely. So if you are looking for saves, David Robertson, if he's available on your wire or in Fab, go and get him because he looks like the guy, and he looks really good. Even if he's not the guy, I think he's got the best chance. So I was someone who was even piping Adam Ottavino the whole time. I think someone came on the podcast that we were interviewing and said that they think Robertson will be the guy. And I reluctantly said, I think Ottavino just because Buck trusts him. And man, I will admit that I'm wrong right now because he looked really good. And I think David Robertson is going to be the guy.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Buck might be, you know, keeping Ottavino as kind of maybe a fireman role or something like that.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, some guys just really excel in that closer role, and it looks like Robertson is maybe one of those guys who, when it's the ninth inning and he's in a save situation, you know, he just becomes a different pitcher.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. But we're both 1-0 for our teams. 162-0 pace, baby. We're going to the World Series. Twins versus Mets podcast rivalry.
Yep.
But now that opening day is finally here, we have to highlight some of the best performances from the day. Obviously, this podcast, we don't have too much to work with, just one day of games, so it'll be a little different than our usual weekly podcast where we'll highlight each day that went by. But let's talk about some of the hitters that did really well. We'll start off with the person who hit the first home run of the 2023 season. That is Aaron Judge of the Yankees. He went 2-for-4 with that first home run. He had a solo shot and had 2 RBI on the day total, so he had just a good game overall. Obviously, coming off of that 62 home run season, it's nice to see him get out of the gate quickly. And I have a lot of shares of him, so I'm particularly happy about this.
Yeah, I found it actually kind of interesting that I think Aaron Boone had some comments where he was saying that, you know, Judge kind of knows his body now. You know, he knows, he knows how to take care of himself. And he's like, he wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Aaron Judge challenged his home run record from last year. And while I think, you know, being able to hit 62 homers is not something that just happens every single season for players. I think Aaron Judge definitely kind of came back and showed like, hey, you know, like last year was not like a trick or anything. Like I still have the same power. You know, the offseason wasn't like that taxing for me, things like that. And so, yeah, I'm not saying he's going to be having a 60 home run season. Obviously, it's too soon to say that, but he's certainly on pace for it. So we'll see what that looks like for Judge for the rest of the season.
So obviously 62, like you said, is a long shot to really estimate or hope for, but I really think he can hit 50 home runs again with ease. I just think that's a definite possibility. And that's why, like in drafts, it was between, for me, at least if I had the second or first pick, it's between Acuna and Judge. Now, I love Joe Ram, and once again, third base is super shallow, so I really like getting Joe Ram as well. And Trey Turner obviously is amazing too. But in terms of first overall pick, it's between Acuna and Judge for me this season. And I was leaning more of Judge just because Acuna, we really don't know what we'll get. We expect a 40-40 season, and he's got the talent to do that. But I think locking down someone who has 50 homer plus upside, with probably the floor being 40 home runs, I would say, is so important to lock down at the start of your draft so you have more flexibility later on in your draft.
Yep.
So that's why I was really harping the Judge train there.
Well, and he hits for average. He gets RBIs. I mean, like, you know, this is a team that right now, at least on the offensive side, is fairly healthy.
Yeah. Yep.
And I mean, you know, last year was a little tough for the Yankees. Like there were some points where it's like, who is this outfield that they're trying to get?
The Yankees, you mean the Judges? It was just Judge by himself.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It was just Judge playing.
He was just like, I am the Yankees.
Right? I am the Yankees. Yeah, exactly. That's why he became the captain, because they realized, man, we didn't have a team except for that guy.
Right, exactly. But hey, Gleyber Torres hit a homer yesterday, you know, like,
and stole a base.
And stole a base. Yeah, exactly. So like the team is looking healthy for day one, at least. I mean, we'll see how long this lasts. Rizzo and Stan aren't exactly, you know, guys who can play entire seasons. So we'll see how this all works out. Hopefully Judge does stay healthy, and he kind of, you know, maybe goes after that 62 mark yet again.
Yeah, and also Volpe, who played in his first MLB game on mm-hmm. opening day, he did not record his first hit, but he drew a walk and stole a base. So that's also pretty promising.
Yep, my fantasy team was very happy about that.
Well,
not getting any hits, of course. Just, you know, the walk in the stolen base was nice.
Yeah, the steal's always good.
Yep.
Moving on to someone who had an incredible performance, probably one of the best of the day, Brendan Donovan of the Cardinals, who went 3-for-6 with 3 runs, a home run, and 2 RBI. He also barreled the ball really hard, but Springer made an excellent diving catch on it in right. Otherwise, it would have been an RBI double, so Donovan had a great day, could have been 4-for-6, got robbed really for one of those hits. And he's just looking really good. In spring, he had 4 home runs. He had a different approach at the plate, they said, where he's being a little bit more aggressive. And he's really seeing the ball well. He's barreling it up. He's hitting it hard. He looks like a different hitter. And he didn't have a lot of home runs last season, but 4 in spring, 1 on opening day. He's the leadoff hitter for the Cardinals, at least against righties. I really like the look of Brendan Donovan in the Cardinals lineup, and I think he's someone that if he's available on your wire or in fab, you got to go and get him, because he's also eligible everywhere in terms of positions.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that. I think he has at least second and third eligibility.
So on Yahoo, which obviously Yahoo gives out eligibility for, I think it's 5 games started and 10 appearances. So really, you just have to walk over the position to get eligibility on Yahoo. Mm-hmm. But Brendan Donovan has first base, second base, third base, shortstop, outfield on Yahoo. Everything but catcher.
Right. Yeah. So he can literally play anywhere. And I think he'll take that. He's currently rostered in 29% of leagues on ESPN. I'm not sure what the Yahoo number is, but
71% on Yahoo.
71% on Yahoo.
I think it's because he had that hot start and people picked him up today. I think he was 58 as of last night.
Wow. Okay. That's incredible.
Yeah. Kind of shot up there.
That disparity is actually kind of hilarious.
I think his ESPN is mainly points leagues, if I had to guess. I think that's why, okay. And I don't know how good Brendan Donovan is in points leagues.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, my league's an ESPN, and it's a categories league, so I guess I'm a little confused.
Yeah, you're the outlier on ESPN.
I'm the one. Yeah, exactly. But if he's batting leadoff for that team, and we said this last year with Tommy Edman, like, if you just give a guy that shot, to be like, hey, we trust you. We're putting you here because, you know, we know you have good bat skills and, you know, whatever. Like, that can give a guy confidence to just go out there and mash. Obviously, Brendan Donovan's not exactly a guy where you think like, oh, you know, he's one of those major power guys. But he has a lot of nice protection behind him. And, you know, if he has good exit velocity as well. So I think there's no reason to, you know, pick up a flyer on him, especially with that position eligibility.
Yeah, I completely agree. And whenever anybody for the leadoff for the Cardinals, which Brendan Donovan is currently slated in as, you're going to score a lot of runs. I mean, when you have Lars Nootbaar, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, Tyler O'Neill behind you, you are going to score a lot as long as you hit the ball, and he's hitting it really good right now. So,
right. And the thing with Donovan, too, is that ultimately it comes down to his hit tool, right? Like, that's why people liked him. He was batting, you know, .281 last year, over 126 games. Like, certainly that's something that you can run with. If you're in an OBP league, 394 OBP, that's great. We'll just see if the other counting stats come along with this, because that's the one reason why he's, you know, was initially so low rostered, because he doesn't have the counting stats.
Right. It's all about if he can get those homers and get some steals in there as well, because he might just be an empty batting average with runs, and we don't know yet. But I think he's the quintessential bench bat to have. So if you need a bench bat, that's someone that could just fill in anywhere at any time, play, be the leadoff guy. If you need runs on your team, go and get this guy if he's available. But moving on to the next player, CJ Krohn of the Rockies, who went 4-for-5 with 2 home runs, the only double dong of opening day. 2 runs, 2 homers, 5 RBI. Great game for Krohn. He was really undervalued in drafts this season. People kind of slept on him, and rightfully so. Those splits are disgusting outside of Coors. But this game was in San Diego. It was against Blake Snell, who we all expect to do much better as long as he gets rid of the changeup. But CJ Krohn on the road usually is horrendous. And this game was on the road. He had 2 home runs. It was against a good pitcher in a park that's really not the best for hitters, but it's not bad. I don't know. I think Krohn was maybe a little too slept on in drafts.
I mean, he is that guy who kind of occupied the same space as like Rhys Hoskins, right? Like, like that guy is like a, you know, he's a top 10 first baseman, but he's not a top 5 first baseman. You know, he for sure, like, you love the Coors factor for Krohn. And I mean, he was a twin for, I think a season. I don't know if it was 2 seasons. And he was like decent as a first baseman for us. But he was never like a guy who you're like, oh, this guy is, you know, a real solid guy that you want to be drafting early. But he is that nice value at the end of a season where it's like, oh, yeah, CJ Krohn, 30 homers, you know, like.
Yeah, I feel like there was a tier for first base where it was like Rhys Hoskins, when he was healthy, of course, Anthony Rizzo, Christian Walker, CJ Krohn, Josh Bell. Like, that was all a tier of first baseman that you could get later on in your draft. Oh, and Rowdy Tellez, too. Can't throw him away, too. So that tier right there, I think Krohn was being taken in the last of those. I think people were taking Rizzo and Hoskins and Walker. Rightfully so. Walker has incredible Statcast numbers. Rizzo's in a Yankees lineup. There was a lot of good reasons to take guys over Krohn, but Krohn was the last guy of that tier, and you probably got him really late in your drafts if you took him. And I mean, this is a great start. I don't want to just give him flowers right now to start with, because once again, those splits were horrible last season. So don't know what to expect out of Krohn, but I think we'll see some good things out of him. I would expect a 30 home run season, especially with calling his home ballpark Coors Field. Talking about home runs, Alec Bohm of the Phillies went 3-for-4 with 2 runs, a homer, and 3 RBI. He had a 2-run shot off of DeGrom to the opposite field. It was a missile. I mean, DeGrom got rocked. I mean, that's a different story, but is the Bohm breakout happening?
Hey, again, one of those guys who's at the tail end of third base, you know, the starting third base tier. A lot of people, though, were kind of saying, you know, third base is kind of deep, right? Like, yes, it's super top heavy with those guys, but once you start getting to, like, you know, the guys who are in, you know, maybe those 10 to 12 range, 10, 8 to 12 range, maybe, let's be a little bit more generous. Like, those guys can actually rake, and Bohm's one of those guys.
Yeah, obviously the Phillies, we expect to have a good lineup, and I think a lot of that comes from the people that we need to see more from, which is Alec Bohm. If he takes a step forward, their lineup is so much better. Derek Hall, we don't know what we're going to get out of him. If he takes a step forward, they're going to be good. Bryson Stott, if he takes a step forward, they're going to be good. So, and Castellanos, if he rebounds also. But that lineup could be really good and really scary. And they obviously were in the World Series last season because of that offense, and their pitching was pretty solid too. But Bohm, if he takes a step forward, he could be a guy that makes the third base position not look too bad, because Bohm was being taken late, like you said, in drafts. And if you needed a third baseman, I liked falling back on him just because of the upside. And it looks really good. I mean, hitting a 2-run shot off of DeGrom is a great start.
Yeah. And the thing with Bohm, too, is, I mean, he had 3 hard hits yesterday, right? So 3 contact over 95 miles an hour wasn't necessarily hits. But that's always been his thing. Like, he can hit the ball super hard. He was 27th in hard contact last year among, you know, all hitters in baseball. The problem is he just hits it into the ground too much.
Yep.
So if he somehow has, like, improved his swing path or something here where he's not grounding the ball, you know, last year it was actually improvement. He grounded the ball 47% of the time. The year before that was 57%. So this dude just mashes the ball into the ground. If that just goes down, let's just say, to league average numbers, right? All of a sudden, this is a guy who's not hitting 13 homers. He might be hitting 20. And that's pretty solid production from third base if you're grabbing this guy, if you grab this guy, as like the 10th best third baseman off the board.
Without a doubt, it's definitely nice to see him starting off hot because he could be really good, especially for fantasy. Moving on to two guys who had 5 hit days on opening day. Adley Rutschman of the Orioles went 5 for 5, hit 1 home run, had 4 RBI, and also drew a walk. He's the first catcher in MLB history to have 5 hits on opening day, so a cool little stat there. And then George Springer of the Blue Jays went 5 for 6, 4 runs, and 1 RBI. He tied the Blue Jays opening day hits record with 5, which is pretty awesome. And just a cool fact for both of these guys, Springer and Rutschman both had 5 hit games on opening day, which is the first time that this has happened since 1901, which that's just wild. That's like almost the start of baseball.
Yeah, that's some fun history there. Yeah, both guys. Springer was kind of interesting because I think all of his hits were for singles, or maybe
yeah.
4 of the hits were for singles or something like that.
Yep.
And like that's kind of just what you like to see from Springer, like good contact. Like the power will come for sure. But he was playing in St. Louis too. He wasn't playing, back in a great Canadian small park now. yeah, that was I like that from Springer. And then Rutschman, just he's the truth. I really hope that the Orioles just lock him up because a catcher talent like that, just it would be nice if he stayed with one team. Of course, I'm a little sentimental here because of Joe Mauer, but Rutschman is clearly a real MLB player. Last year was obviously example of that, but to be able to come out on opening day and provide that sort of performance, it's just impressive, and you hope that he stays with the Orioles and they actually have a good team there, kind of building with all these rookies that they now have.
Yeah, I'm actually really upset that I don't have any shares of Adley. I kind of just skipped on him in drafts, just thinking that he'd be a good average hitting catcher with not a lot of pop, maybe 20 homers, but I just kind of skipped out on him, and the excitement is real with this kid. It looks awesome. He seems like a genuinely nice dude. Alex Fast made a tweet of where he slid into someone at second.
Oh,
and like,
that was hilarious.
Yeah, made sure they were okay and sat with him, and the trainer was like, hey, go away.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. It was like, it's like, dude, why do you slide like that? Because
it was a horrible slide.
He basically like scorpion kicks the guy in the head. And
yeah.
He's just like, dude, what are you doing?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're both special talents. Like you said, George Springer, him just getting hits is what you want to see. Healthy and getting hits, because in that Blue Jays lineup, he's going to score a lot of runs and have a lot of opportunities.
Yep.
So
exactly. Very excited about that.
Now for someone who was a hero of opening day, Ty France of the Mariners went 3 for 4 with a home run and 3 RBI. That home run was the game winner in the 8th. It wasn't a walk-off or anything, but it did take the lead. It was a 0-0 game, and Ty France hit that 3-run homer, and it was a missile. So Ty France, someone who is kind of an afterthought at first and third base where he's eligible. He's someone that's a really good hitter, but he hasn't put up good stats for fantasy. Great average, right, but not really outstanding power numbers.
Yeah. He's like kind of maybe the tier below Crone.
Yes.
Like he doesn't have the same amount of power. The unfortunate thing is that he hits in Seattle for half of his games.
Yeah, yeah.
But he takes advantage of that with the average, right? And so that's kind of what you want out of a guy who maybe, if you're in a deeper league, your corner infield guy, that's kind of what you like out of, that's what you hope to get out of a guy like Ty France.
Right. Yeah. You just want to get a good average and hopefully like 25 homers. If he has a 25 homer, 90 RBI, 280 average season, he'll be way worth where you drafted him at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And that's what you really hope out of him. And then last but not least, James Outman of the Dodgers had quite a game as well. 2 for 3, 3 runs, 1 homer, and 2 RBI. He looked really good. He's obviously a prospect or rookie that's coming up for the Dodgers. He only played in a few games last season. He did hit a homer last season, so this wasn't his first career home run, but it was the first homer of the season for him, and he's going to get a lot of playing time with the Dodgers since Lux is out and Chris Taylor had a horrible spring, so James Outman is a name to be on the lookout for.
Yeah, in deep leagues, I think he makes a lot of sense as a pickup. Right now, just keep an eye out for him because that is a high-powered Dodgers lineup. And so he can definitely be the recipient of, some help there, whether that's through runs or RBIs. Kind of depends on where they put him in the lineup. Right now he's batting 8th, but that doesn't mean that he couldn't move up in that lineup at all. So we'll see how that all works out for Outman, but great start for him this season.
Yeah, it's good to see. And if you're in a five outfield league, I think this is a guy you definitely go and spend some fab on or pick up on the waivers, because he's going to have a lot of opportunity. And if he hits like this, or just even remotely like this, it's going to be a good return for you for the outfield.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about the pitcher performances from opening day, as well as some cool opening day facts, and just talk about opening day in general, so stay tuned. All right, we are back, and now it's time to talk about pitchers from opening day. We have to start off with the, I mean, is it wrong to say the GOAT, Shohei Ohtani of the Angels. 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, a 0.83 whip, and 10 strikeouts against the Athletics. Fun little fact, the Angels still lost that game somehow.
Yeah, Sarah Lang said a fun tweet on this. Basically, Ohtani's outing was the 26th since 1901. Again, you know, kind of going back to baseball history.
Yeah.
Where he had 10 plus strikeouts and no runs allowed on opening day. He was the 26th guy to do that. He's the first guy where the team lost the game, though. My goodness, just so frustrating. Like, it's so frustrating to be like, I'm like a pseudo Angels fan. Like, one of my good friends is an Angel fan, and I mean, it's hard to not root for a team that has Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout on it.
Yeah,
but oh my goodness, just the Angels are going to Angel. Like, oh
yeah, it, I mean, like, that's brutal.
And the problem is they're playing the A's. I don't know if you saw this tweet too. Someone posted like a picture of what the Coliseum looked like on opening day.
Yeah,
and it's like maybe a third full.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Know?
And they're, it's just, oh God, it's the worst. Anyways, enough ranting about that. Shohei is legit. The sweeper looked great. And I am so glad that he is still playing baseball.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani is incredible. I can't believe we get to watch him. I mean, literally the first of his kind, the only person who's ever done something like this ever and had the success that he's had. I mean, it's actually remarkable. It's just a pleasure to watch him day in and day out. And man, the sweeper looked great, 10 strikeouts. Obviously, the Athletics are bad, so you can't really just say, oh, Ohtani's the best pitcher in baseball right now. But yeah, he is definitely up there. I mean, this is nasty. He is absolutely filthy.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Gerrit Cole of the Yankees, who, in all forms of everything, he was the first pitcher off the board in most fantasy drafts. He went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, a 0.83 whip. Wow, very similar line. 11 strikeouts in a win over the Giants.
Yeah, Cole looked really, really dominant. And I mean, kind of ironically, the other pitchers around him in that tier didn't look that great.
Yeah.
So on opening day. So maybe a little bit of a day one validation for people who picked up Cole first in their drafts. But yeah, he looked good. The fastball was dominant as usual. 64% usage, 9 whiffs on it, and 7 called strikes. So, you know, pretty solid outing for him. The slider was pretty solid as well, 38% CSW. So just a good day for Cole. It's hard to top 11 strikeouts in an opening day start.
Yeah, I think he started off the game by walking Lamont Wade Jr. on 4 pitches, and then he struck out like 8 in a row. Like, it was actually remarkable. Gerrit Cole is nasty, and anybody who took him as their first pitcher and obviously invested a first or second round pick on him, it looks like it's going to pay off, because this was a dominant performance right out of the gate.
Right. And he only gave up 4 hard hits as well. So, like, that's always been his Achilles heel, right?
Yep.
Like, just giving up the long ball. But, you know, he managed to keep the ball in the field this time around. So, obviously, he's playing the Giants, who not exactly, you know, murderous row right there. But, but still, you know, a good look.
Yeah, no, for sure. And now moving on to your guy who you spoke about earlier, Pablo Lopez of the Twins. He went 5.1 innings pitched, no earned runs, a 0.94 whip, 8 strikeouts in a win over the Royals. So any notes about Lopez here? Because that's your boy.
Yeah. So the fun thing about Lopez, right, what everyone knows about him is like great fastball changeup mix, right? And then he, you know, combined that with a sinker, had a little bit of curveball in there over the past few years. This year he developed the new sweeper pitch, and he tossed it 22% of the time. It was the second most used pitch behind his fastball. And that sweeper was deadly. It got 8 whiffs on it, 47% CSW. The changeup looked pretty good too. Just guys were just whiffing, and it was a great introduction to Twins fans for what Pablo Lopez can do. Obviously, if you play fantasy baseball, you know, you're well aware of what Pablo can do. Even though part of it is that he's, you know, limited by injury, that was always the knock against him. But I think, like, you know, the greater Twins community got to see, oh yeah, this guy's actually legit. Like, you know, there's a little bit of the sting of losing Luis Soraya because he was just a fan favorite. But,
Yeah.
you know, getting a guy who's could legitimately be an ace, I think, is an all right trade for me.
Yeah, I mean, Pablo Lopez looks really good. And as you said, the WBC, he had increased velocity and it looks like it's keeping up. If he could keep that up the whole season and also just not get injured, that is such a great acquisition for you guys because Pablo Lopez looks really good. He has the potential to be an ace. Pitcherless has always loved him. He's actually a friend of Pitcherless. So very cool. Very cool. Pablo Lopez is nasty. Moving on to someone who just, if you look at this list that we have written down, you can play this thing. One of these things is not like the other. And this is the one right here. It's Marcus Stroman of the Cubs. He went six innings pitched, no earned runs, one whip, eight Ks in a win over the Brewers. You just don't expect a line like that from Stroman. And the Brewers aren't one of the best offenses in the league, of course, but Stroman dealt. He looked really good. Six innings, eight strikeouts, no runs. I mean, what more could you ask for? I mean, most people probably don't have Stroman even rostered. Like I said, this name is the one that doesn't belong on this list here, but he certainly deserved it with how he pitched today.
Yeah. The funny thing, too, was that his velocity was down, like, pretty much on everything. So it wasn't probably even, like, his best stuff. Or maybe he's tinkered with something and he's realizing that, like, maybe he doesn't need to throw as hard. But, yeah, Stroman was dominant, especially considering the fact that the guy opposite the mound on him was a guy named Corbin Burns.
Yeah.
who did not have a great day. Yeah, it was kind of funny. I had a team where I had Sandy Alcantara, Jacob DeGrom, and Marcus Stroman all going, and Kyle Gibson, but you know he's an afterthought.
Yeah,
but out of all those four pitchers, Marcus Stroman was the only one who got a quality start.
Crazy,
which was just like you know, exactly why you pick up Marcus Stroman, right? He doesn't matter. He'll get you a quality start. Doesn't matter how ugly or how beautiful it looks. He'll get you that quality start. So, but yeah, good day for him. We'll see if it, you know, keeps up for the rest of the year. He has a really nice start. I think he's like his next three opponents are like super cushy. So if you have Stroman, hold on to him. If he's in your on your waiver wire, I definitely recommend picking him up at least for the next two starts. And then once he's terrible, you know, once he's back to normal Stroman, you can drop him.
Yeah, and he's had good seasons before, so he can piece together a good full season, but I don't expect much out of him, especially because Chicago's windy, and he is more of a ground ball pitcher, but I don't know. Stroman is kind of a tinkerer and not really sure how he'll hold up the whole season, but this is a great start, and his schedule's good, so yeah, go and grab him if he's available for you and ride out the hot streak.
There was actually a really cool graphic that Marquee Sports, I think that's the broadcaster for the Cubs, they put up where they were kind of showing where all the wind was coming in. Yesterday, and it was like, I think it was like coming in, like it was like moving balls in like 20 feet, like from coming in from left field. So if he can kind of utilize that to his advantage, you know, maybe we'll have a good Stroman year this year. I mean, last year was his first year in Wrigley, so he's probably, you know, fully adjusted to the park now. We'll see if that does anything.
Yeah, that's a great tidbit there for sure, because I think if you're a Cubs pitcher, you have to kind of play to the wind, right? Moving on to a pitcher that I roster in my home league, speaking of pitchers that we roster, Luis Castillo, thankfully, was the only good pitcher on my roster. Nola and Hunter Green were different stories there, but Luis Castillo of the Mariners went six innings pitched, no earned runs, a 0.17 whip, six strikeouts against the Guardians, did not factor into the decision. Paul Sewald actually ended up getting the win there, but Luis Castillo pitched great.
Yeah, no complaints. I mean, his velocity was down, so that was a little weird. You know, it's the classic, you know, Luis Castillo in cold weather. Playing in Seattle, it's, you know, not that much warmer there than it was in, you know, Cincinnati. So we'll see how that all shakes out for him. But you know, he looked good. The real story from that day, that was the Matt Brash K against Jose Ramirez.
So awesome.
If you haven't seen that, Pitching Ninja tweeted out, I think Alex Fast tweeted out. Oh, Joe Ram just looked silly. That was just one of those fun things to watch if you enjoy watching pitching.
The one thing I will say, just in defense of Joe Ram, is the pitch was going to hit his leg or foot. So he swung at the pitch and at the same time tried to get out of the way of the pitch, which resulted in such a hilarious fall down. But it was nasty. That pitch was so filthy. It's disgusting. I mean, I would have swung out of my shoes too. So no offense to Joe Ram. I love you, Joe Ram. But that was crazy. Yeah, it was absolutely nuts. But ever since Castillo has buttoned up a Mariners uniform, he's been really good. And I'm very much looking forward to him this season. I think the Mariners are going to be a great team this year.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're in a wins league, he's going to help out a lot there. Obviously, he didn't get it yesterday, but he's going to get, you know, plenty of opportunities to get wins. And you just know that he is going to be able to keep down those ratios because that's kind of who he is. So it'll be exciting to see what a full season in Seattle looks like for him, being able to play in that park. But obviously, based on the last half of last season, it was pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's why I drafted him. I can't wait. Moving on to Shane McClanahan of the Rays. He went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, a 0.83 whip, and 6 strikeouts in a win over the Tigers. Now, McClanahan is obviously an ace, has amazing stuff, but the Tigers are also terrible. Absolutely terrible. Yep. So just like the Shohei Ohtani versus the A's sort of deal, we want to see him against a very good opponent, and obviously we'll see the same of what we saw all of last season, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the curveball was about a tick and a half higher. Not really that notable. Really, you care more about fastball velocity. It was about a half tick higher, so nothing really interesting there. But, you know, he was getting whiffs on the changeup. That just came to work and did his job, and that's kind of all you can ask for these aces.
Yeah, McClanahan's very, very good. And speaking of someone who's very, very good and looked very, very good, someone that I was actually down on going into the season, Dylan Cease of the White Sox. He went 6.1 innings pitched, a 1.42 ERA. He's actually the only person on this list that had an ERA, which is pretty crazy to think of. A 0.32 whip and 10 strikeouts against the Astros. His stuff was just filthy. He had 15 whiffs. I mean, there was a cool camera angle. I don't know if you saw the tweet.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really cool where they basically, I don't know if it was on the catcher's shoulder or if it was on the umpire. I'm not sure where
that. I think it was on the ump.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty sure it was on the ump.
Yeah. So on the umpire, they had a camera and basically they showed like a Dylan Cease 98 mile per hour fastball that was like high. And then they showed his knuckle curve. And you're not hitting that. I mean, look how hard baseball is. If you watch that video, to all the listeners out there, watch that video. And if you ever think that these guys are struggling or bad, or if you're calling them names, look at that video and be like, can I even come close to doing that?
Yeah. Well,
because it's so difficult.
The important thing was that the guy in the batter's box was Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah. It wasn't no schlub. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't just like a random like Yadier Diaz, right? It wasn't like Martin Maldonado. I was like, no, it's probably one of the better hitters of this, you know, maybe let's just say the past 2 years.
Yep.
So yeah, Cease looked real good. Kind of the most impressive thing was, again, no walks. That's always been the issue with Cease, just, you know, walk machine. You know, that's why that whip always explodes. So good to see him not give up any free passes, and obviously the strikeouts are just nice with that filthy stuff.
Yeah, no free passes against probably one of the best offenses in the league in the Astros. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I was so low on him going into the season, is just because those walks and his control. Like, I always feel like he's one pitch away from being down 5 runs. And obviously you could say that about any pitcher, but for him specifically with his control and his volatility, I just didn't like where he was going in drafts due to his price. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if he just does this all season, he's going to win a Cy Young Award. So
right. Yeah, the only unfortunate thing is just that this is probably the peak of what we'd expect to see from Cease.
Right.
But if he can kind of continue something similar to this over the course of the season, yeah, that Cy Young is just pretty much in his grasp.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And then just one note quickly, Hunter Green had 8 strikeouts in 3.1 innings pitched. So that means 2 outs that he recorded were not by strikeout. It was really impressive. Now, he was going against the Pirates, so I'm not going to explode anything, but Hunter Green looked really good, and I think there was some things that I watched, because I watched his entire start. So the one thing I can say is I think the pitch clock got to him just a few times, and the broadcast was saying that he realizes that it's a strength to him, not a weakness, and he's got to adjust to that.
Yeah.
And that's obviously something that everyone's adjusting to. But there was one moment, and this is specifically where I want people to not worry. And in general, I'll say something, an adage afterwards, but Hunter Green was pitching against O'Neill Cruz, and he got him into an 0-2 count, and then he got an automatic ball called on him for some reason. I forget exactly what happened, but he had an automatic ball called on him, and then he was kind of flustered, and then he looked like he deliberately sped up because the next pitch he like sailed way out of where he wanted to throw it, and then the next one was like in the dirt, and he had no control after that. Like, it rattled him. Like, it visibly rattled him. And then the next pitch was just 100 miles per hour down the middle of the plate, and O'Neill Cruz hit it for a home run. So,
yeah,
like,
he crushed that one.
Yeah, it was a missile. So the one thing I want to say is that, like, Hunter Green, obviously the line doesn't look too good. He gave up three runs. His whip was a little 3.1 innings pitched, 8 strikeouts. The strikeouts are great, and I think that as time goes, he's obviously someone who's volatile, but he could be unbelievable.
Yeah. He clearly has a lot of hype surrounding him this season.
Yes.
The ceiling is incredibly high for Hunter Green. You know, I'm not saying he's a dark horse Cy Young candidate at all, but there's the potential where he could actually, you know, somewhat thrive in Great American Small Park.
Yep.
You know, the short field is always going to be tough for him, but if he really improves his stuff, specifically, like, you know, makes that fastball just a little less hittable, there's definitely just he has such a high ceiling.
Yeah, the one thing I can say is he was locating that fastball up, and that's what you want to see out of Green. That's the key. Mm-hmm. If he gets that in the middle, danger. But if he gets it up, unhittable, especially paired with that slider. So I'm looking forward to Green. It's going to be an up and down season, I think, to start, so just bear with him. But in general, his upside is just immense. Obviously, the start was against the Pirates, so temper expectations, but the strikeouts are real, and I think he could be dominant.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I want to say just to everybody, because this is common for all of us, we're all human, we all play fantasy baseball. The one thing I want to say is, guys, it's one day of games. Don't freak out. Even me, at a slight second, Aaron Nola goes through three innings, no hits given up in one walk. I'm like, man, yes, my ace. He looks so good. And then the next inning gives up 5 runs, and I'm like, what a waste. Why did I do that? Why did I take him? I could have took a bat. What am I doing? Don't freak out, guys. It's one day of games. It's a long season. Don't make any panic decisions. Just stay calm. Everything's going to be okay. Just remember that. I want everyone to remember that. Just because your ace, like Corbin Burns, because look around the league, most aces got shelled. The ones that we highlighted, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pitchers, literally 7 pitchers pitched fantastic. Everybody else kind of got rocked. So don't be upset. Don't overreact. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. The other thing too was, again, this is coming from Sir Legs. Yesterday, there were 5 shutouts recorded on opening day, and that's the most, it's the second most in terms of baseball history. So
okay.
Because of that, some of these pitchers look really, really good, right?
Yep, like, of course.
Like, oh, wow, you know, like Shane Mack threw a, you know, 6 innings, no runs. You know, Gerrit Cole, obviously, 6 innings, no runs. Shohei, 6 innings, no runs. But yeah, you contrast that with all the other guys who were drafting around him, right? Like, I'll admit, DeGrom going 3.2 innings was a little scary.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, is that injury? No, he was actually just bad.
Yeah, he was just
like,
bad. It was crazy to see.
I'll take that then. You know, like Sandy being a third of an inning away from a quality start. Incredibly frustrating. But at the same time, like, you know, like it's one day. If you're in a roto league, it all averages out, right? If you're in a head-to-head league, you still have a week to catch up.
Yep.
Yeah, like your season, as much as we like to overreact, is not made on day one. You can't win your season on day one. You also can't lose your season on day one either. Unless you're one of those guys who, you know, managed to pick up Rhys Hoskins, Edwin Diaz, and Brendan Rodgers on your draft, then we're really sorry for you.
Yeah, it's just a PSA to not panic, because we all do it. We're all human. Yeah. Don't panic. Everything's going to be okay. It's just one day. But let's move on to some interesting stuff around opening day, because a lot of cool things happen. And I really want to point to this tweet from Alex Fast, because I think it really shows what this season's going to be. And I was saying this all off season, which I'm very happy about, but Alex Fast tweeted, stolen base opening day comparison. Now, he compared 2022 opening day to 2023 opening day in terms of steals. In 2022, there were 5 stolen bases on opening day. There were 4 caught stealings. Obviously, that's a success rate of 56%. But once again, there was only 9 attempts. In 2023, on opening day, there were 21 stolen bases and 2 caught stealing for a success rate of 91%. That's 23 attempts compared to 9 on one day of games. So that's remarkable. I thought in general that steals were going to go up 25%. That's what I had it. That's what I've been saying all offseason. I either said 20 or 25, but just in that realm, that's how much steals are going to jump up. And just by these numbers, it might even be more than that. I mean, everyone is running. People aren't getting caught as much. It's actually wild.
The fact that there were 23 attempts, right? Like, that's double last, that's more than double last year.
Yeah.
And they were succeeding. And so it's really interesting to see this, and I'm hoping it stays for the rest of the season, right? Like, so last year, we saw a bunch of guys go run in spring training, and then it didn't translate to the rest of their season. But I think it's good in terms of just like a day one case that whoever that, even though that they were sending them in spring training, they're also now going to send them in the regular season. And so I think that's exciting. It's fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to more stolen bases.
Yeah, it just brings you back to the days that I remember as a kid, and I'm not that old, I'm only 30 years old, but I remember the era of Kenny Lofton and Ichiro and people that stole base all the time, Ricky Henderson towards the latter half of his career, like all these guys that made stolen bases really cool and playing the game fundamentally smart was beneficial. And the pitch clock, the shift ban, the bases, it's really bringing it back to that. And I love that form of baseball. Like, I'm super excited about this.
Yeah, there was on ESPN Daily, Jeff Passan was talking about how with these rule changes, like, you know, you'd think that the people who, you know, would not be a fan of these rule changes are kind of like, you know, the old, like, oh, baseball tradition, you know, sort of people. But in some respects, like, the rules that MLB's put in this season are kind of similar to like how baseball was played, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Yep.
And that's not to say that, you know, baseball regressed in the past 10 years. I think we've gone so much farther with, you know, analytics and with how great like pitching has become. And
agreed.
You can see, you know, Aaron Judge hitting 62 homers. Like, clearly, like, something is working. But part of it was, yeah, we lost some of the fun stuff. We lost, you know, stolen bases were down. Games were taking forever to finish. I just think these small incremental changes that MLB's made, yes, it might be annoying, and we'll talk a little bit about how, you know, some people got some automatic strikes for some stupid reasons.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, it just makes baseball a much more fun product to watch, and I really enjoy that.
I couldn't agree more with that. It's very awesome. But some other cool things that happened on opening day, we'll just run through these really quick. Hunter Renfroe made an insane no-look catch. It made no sense. He really just made a mistake in the outfield and then just threw his glove up and didn't look and caught it.
Yep.
And it was wild. It was like the modern-day Jumpman Jordan pose. It was insane. I don't know. If you didn't see the clip, go and watch it, because I can't describe it to you just vocally, because it was insane. I just don't understand.
Yeah, he literally just stuck out his glove, and it's like, oh, the ball's there.
Yeah, and it looked like he purposely did it, but he didn't, and it was really cool. I don't know. It looked awesome. It was an incredible catch. Also, Adam Wainwright surprised everybody on the field by singing the national anthem. He was lined up, and then they announced him as the singer for the national anthem, went and killed it for the national anthem. Well, it was pretty wild.
I mean, I don't know if he truly killed it. He
True,
was all right.
But he gave it his best shot.
Yeah. You know, this is maybe one of those circumstances where I'm like, stick to pitching. Maybe.
Yeah, fair. Hey, he's on the IL right now, right? Like, give him, he can do some singing.
Yeah, what else can he do, right?
Yeah. He's been practicing singing lessons in his spare time. What else can he do?
Yep.
Rafael Devers was the first batter called out on a strike 3 pitch clock violation, which I thought was interesting. And then on the flip side, Marcus Stroman was the first pitcher to have a pitcher pitch clock violation. So both of them are the first, I guess, martyrs for the new pitch clock system. Which is interesting to see. Rafael Devers was like, what, man? Like, come on. But he did take a long time. He, like, got in the box, and then they gave him, like, an extra second to look up, and he just didn't do it. So that was on him. But, yeah, that was interesting to see that happen in the first major league games. And then, as you were saying before, Pete Alonso gave Jeff McNeil an automatic strike for not getting back to first base fast enough. Now, the thing about this, before I throw it to you, is I found the exact quote for the rule. And the rule is, the clock won't start until everyone is back to their position. The first requirement for starting the clock is that the pitcher has the ball and is on the dirt of the mound. But for instance, if a ball is fouled off down the line and the fielders run after it, and potentially any base runners take off, the clock for the next pitch will not start until everyone on the field has returned to their position. So I think the ump got it wrong in this instance. Like, it shouldn't have been awarded a strike. They should have just said, hey, you know, get back to first faster because we are trying to keep the pace up. And that would have been fine because it clearly says that the clock doesn't start until everyone's back. Now, you could say Pete was like taking a long time, but he doesn't know. This is still new. So tell them, don't give us a strike for no reason.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, not getting back to first base fast enough, like, if anything, just have the pitcher pick him off. Like,
right.
And maybe there's something there with, like, you know, oh, we don't know when we can pick him off because the clock hasn't started, you know, yada, yada, yada. Like, I think this was a good, let's just call it experiment for day one of baseball, right? We understand now how this rule kind of works.
Right.
If it was executed incorrectly, like, you know, maybe it makes more sense for, you know, the umpires to be like, hey, you need to be back here, or it's a strike, or, you know, or you get picked off, or, you know, something like that. Yeah.
Because in the rules currently, it doesn't say that. It says the pitch clock will start after everyone is ready. So Jeff McNeil was clearly saying, hey, Pete's not ready. Hold on. And then they gave him a strike for it. So I don't like that. Obviously, that has to be tightened up a little bit, or the rules have to be, you know, clarified a little bit more clear. But in general, I'm glad it's out of the way. And it didn't result in any problems because McNeil ended up getting a hit and we scored a run. So it was all good. Right. But that is a problem that I'm glad is addressed day one and not, you know, in a crucial point in the season, you know?
Right, exactly.
And then last but not least, there was a fan that went on the field at Dodger Stadium to propose to his significant other. And he went by himself, which was strange, got on the field, took out a ring, got on one knee, and, like, looked at the crowd. So I don't know if he was proposing to the entirety of the Dodgers Stadium, but he was proposing. And one of my favorite clips of this is there's a video angle of Lourdes Gurriel Jr. walking to his position and the guy's on the field and proposing, and he's got his hands up like, yeah, way to go, let's go. And and then the security guard comes and just absolutely NFL linebacker tackles this guy to the ground.
Beautiful tackle.
It was a beautiful tackle. And Gurriel puts his hands on his head like, oh no, what's going on? And it was it was awesome. I mean, first of all, I just agree. I think security's right in tackling him. Maybe it could have tackled him a little bit easier. The guy obviously wasn't, like, hostile or causing a problem. He was just doing a stupid bit for social media and proposing. But he definitely should be evacuated from the field, and you shouldn't do that ever. Like, ever. Yeah. It's so stupid. And I don't know what significant other would want you to do that either. Like, you're not even with them. Like, how do you give them the ring? How do you kiss them? How do you say, you know, like, I don't understand. But it just was really funny on opening day.
Yeah. Great form in that tackle.
Yeah, that security guard should probably get signed to an NFL team. He looked sharp. He should definitely get a promotion. But now we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by pitcherless writer Kevin O'Brien to talk about his article, Randy Arozarena, Complicated Star. Stay tuned. All right, we are back and joined by pitcherless writer Kevin O'Brien. Kevin, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on, and I'm really excited to be on the podcast and talking a little bit about fantasy baseball, especially Randy Arozarena.
So for people who don't know about you, tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been playing fantasy baseball, or what team you're a fan of, just some fun stuff about you.
So I am for a day job, I work in educational administration. So I work at a K-8 school here in Kansas City. But I've been a longtime fantasy baseball player since college back in 2006. I have also been writing for Pitcherless for about 3 years now, mostly contributing to the Going Deep section as well as to the Batter's Box column, which I contribute on Sundays. And I also run my own blog, which is Kansas City Royals specific, called The Royals Reporter at royalsreporter.com. I have a deep love for baseball, fantasy baseball, and Royals baseball, and I love talking and writing about it when I get the chance.
And we're excited to talk to you about your article, Randy Arozarena, Complicated Star, which was a great read, by the way.
Thank you.
Randy is one of those fun guys. Obviously, you started off the article talking about his WBC performance and just how great he was for Team Mexico. Just kind of the hope that he builds on that this upcoming season with the Rays. But the first thing you mentioned that, you know, that's interesting or that's maybe problematic with Randy is his plate discipline, or basically his lack thereof. What are some of those major contributors to that lack of discipline at the plate? Is it because he kind of employs more of a free swinging style, or does he just struggle with identifying balls and strikes?
I think it's You know, that's always a really tough question, and that was something I try to dive deep in, and mm-hmm. it's still something that I think that it's a work in progress. I think a lot of it has to be, you know, we really haven't seen a full season from Randy Rosarena, even though he's been in the league since 2019. He really didn't have a full season till 2021. You know, 2019, he only had a 19-game sample with the Cards. You know, in 2020, he had only 23 games, and then he had that crazy playoff run. And then we kind of saw 2021, 2022. One of the things that I do notice about his plate discipline is we've kind of seen a bit of improvement in terms of contact rate. You look at the on Fangraphs and, you know, looking at contact rates over the years, and we kind of seen him go from about a 64.7% contact rate back in 2020 to 69 in 2021 to 73.5. So it kind of makes me think that I think part of it, there is some kind of just free swinging approach. You know, I think he swings about 46% of the time last year, which is kind of around the league average. So it's not like he's necessarily free swinging. It might just be, I think it's more of a pitch recognition thing. Mm-hmm. And I think he's starting to get more comfortable because we've seen a 5% increase from 2020 to 2021 and then a 4% from 2021 to 2022. So I think a lot of it has been a pitch recognition, but I also think it's just seeing more professional at bats at the major league level. And I think we're starting to see some improvement, though he's not going to be, you know, making anybody think that he's, a walk machine anytime soon.
Right. Like there's a very helpful table you have in your article looking at just contact and strike data. Just find it interesting. Like his swinging strike rate has gone down about 3% since 2020. But then, you know, his O swing actually went up, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. If you can make contact on those O swings, then it can be helpful. But it is interesting that he has cut down the swinging strike rate, but then as a result, maybe not as a result, but like kind of at the same time, his O swing rate has gone up.
Right. Exactly. And that's one of the kind of the biggest conundrums with him, because, you know, typically, you know, when you see guys increase contact rate, decrease swing and strike rate, you would think, oh, hey, you know, he's probably swinging less pitches out of the zone, but last year he swung more out of the zone. but that was really interesting. But also kind of seeing his increase in called strike rate was really interesting as well. You know, going from 17% in 2021 to 18% in 2022, and that kind of negated his kind of the called strike plus whiff, and it was kind of the same. But you know, we did see that called strike plus whiff kind of go down from 2020. So I think there's some really interesting things to pay attention to. I think, again, is this a pitch recognition thing? Is he just becoming more comfortable and better at seeing pitches and recognizing those breaking pitches? And is his approach going to change? Is he going to be swinging more? Is that going to kind of stabilize? I think those are going to be really important things to pay attention to in 2023. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Randy is such an interesting player too, because he has so much upside and potential. But in your article, you bring up Rosarena's contact ability, which is one of our new PLV metrics. He's clearly an above average hitter when it comes to making contact. However, the results of the plate would dispute that. So what's with the difference in results here?
Yeah, I think that was really interesting too. So again, you know, I've really been diving into a lot of, our new PLV, charts from, that are available on PL Pro. And, you know, and it really that was the one kind of chart that really stuck out to me, because you're looking at a guy who's ranking in the 75th percentile regularly, and is well above the major league average in contact frequency. So, but you know, it doesn't show in some of those other stats. You know, it doesn't show. It doesn't really show in contact percentage, or it doesn't really show in rolling. You know, expected WOBA, or WOBA. In terms of what I think we see is that, you know, he has a very strong ability to make contact. But again, what kind of contact is it? And if you look at batted ball data and, a lot of ground balls, I mean, he had a 50% ground ball rate. And when you combine that too with not exactly the hardest hit, even though it was really interesting that his max EV was 114.1, which is, you know, really high. That's, you know, if you look at kind of percentiles, you know, that's some of the upper percentiles from last year. But, you know, if you're hitting it on the ground, you don't have much launch angle. His launch angle has never been higher than 9.2 degrees on average. And that's, you know, pretty below for a guy who's supposed to be a power hitter. You know, those are things that I think we have kind of down, have really hurt his overall stat line. So even though he has this really strong ability to make contact, these other flaws, not launching the ball, not consistent barreling the ball, not consistent exit velocity on batted balls, kind of makes his depresses a lot of his overall stat line.
Yeah, it's crazy because also like Arozarena is kind of deemed, as you said, a power hitter, which is crazy because he has like a powerful build and he's very strong, but he's never eclipsed over 20 homers in a season. I would almost consider him more of a speed guy nowadays. He's got 20 stolen bases in 2021 and then 32 in 2022, but 20 in 2021 and 2022 in home runs for that. So that's pretty interesting that like his contact ability, because his average has gone down every season so far. I mean, obviously small sample sizes in 2019 and 2020, but his average just kind of keeps going down. So it's such a strange thing to look at and try to understand.
Absolutely. And I think that as a fantasy baseball player, you're trying to find, okay, like what does Randy Arozarena kind of satisfy? You know, is he my power guy? Is he my speed guy? Because it feels like which skills are going to really mature like in 2023, obviously, he's a guy, it's like, hey, he's 2020. But, it's also just really interesting, too, is that, Arozarena was not a very efficient, base stealer by any means. Right. He had 12 caught stealing last year, 10 in caught stealing. And if you look at base running runs, on FanGraphs, he was minus 4.3 base running runs below average. A lot of that was getting caught at the plate. I think he was, I don't have the exact stat, but I think he was one of the top players in the league in terms of being caught or being thrown out on the base paths, whether it's a stolen base or, if you're playing in leagues where runs is valuable, that's not good. And right, you kind of saw that, from 2021 scoring 94 runs to going to 72 runs, despite having 40 more plate appearances, that it's like, yes, he's going to give you stolen bases, but is he going to give you runs, in those kind of five category leagues? I'm not sure.
That's actually a really good point, too, that the run difference from 2021 to 2022 with 40 more plate appearances. I mean, that's a significant amount. 20 less runs scored is pretty wild for having more plate appearances and arguably having a better season. So I don't know if that has more to do with his aggression on the base pass and getting thrown out or how bad the Rays lineup was. Like, I'm not sure, but that is definitely an anomaly. That's so strange.
It really is. And I think if you look at kind of team stats and, you look at base running runs, the Rays, they tended to, I feel like they were in pretty good shape last year.
Right.
So I'm looking that up. And again, you also just look at, Tampa Bay, they ranked 11th. So they ranked 11th in overall base runs above average. And this was with a guy that was a total drain on that in Randy Arozarena. When you look at a club that's as analytically, advanced as the Rays, are they going to hold him back this year? Are they going to hold him back on base running? And I think those are going to be some really interesting questions to see if, they kind of saw, hey, maybe we're not going to take as many risks with Randy on the base pass. And will that deflate stolen base and runs, which puts more pressure on him to produce in terms of his hitting?
Right.
Yeah, I will say, as someone whose home league does net steals, Arozarena is incredibly frustrating. Because it's like, oh yeah, he's a 2020 guy. Well, actually, he's more of a 2010 guy in my league. So.
Oh yeah, that's rough.
Yeah. Another thing to point out about your article that I really enjoyed, obviously very analytics heavy with, looking at PLU metrics and stuff like that. But then you included some interesting stuff scouting-wise, specifically referencing a tweet from Andrea of Scoutco Report, who was basically looking at some stance changes for Arozarena, but basically compared the 2022 season and then the WBC during spring training. Could you go into a few more details here about how this change might be helpful to Arozarena this year?
Yeah, I saw her tweet during the WBC, and you know, it was kind of funny because I had begun writing and researching this article before that tweet came, and then I felt like that's like, hey, that was something I really didn't notice. I mean, I think it's really hard with spring training unless you're kind of following the team like really religiously. Like, you know, obviously I know what's going on with the Royals, like with Royals players, but I'm not paying attention to what Rays players are necessarily doing in spring training as much as like with the same kind of fervor that I would for a Royals player. So when I kind of saw Andreas, kind of noticed that. I thought it was just really interesting. I think just from a scouting end, you could kind of see like his hands being more perpendicular to the ground and lower, and just kind of a lot more relaxed with the bat. And it's also just, you could see like the vision. You know, he looks like he could his head is a little bit more open. And, you know, and if pitch recognition is an issue for Randy Arozarena, which I think it might be, you would hope that this kind of change will give him more opportunity to kind of see pitches better, see them sooner, rather than the old swing where he had kind of like his elbows up and more like his shoulders closed. And we kind of saw that stance really, you know, really produce results in the WBC. And of course, WPC pitching is not Major League Baseball pitching necessarily. It's like for every, you know, Shohei Ohtani that pitches for Japan that you face, you also face, you know, some guys from like Czech Republic and Israel, and who might not be necessarily like the same level. But, you know, you kind of see, again, from the limited samples that we saw, you know, just a little bit more fluidity with his swing, and a little bit more able to kind of get to different areas a lot quicker than we kind of saw last year, which I think is going to be really interesting to see how that progresses this year.
Yeah, the WBC really turned Randy Arozarena into a folk legend. He was just on everybody's mind because, well, first of all, he's shagging fly balls in the outfield with cowboy boots on. Everyone was commenting about that. They're like, oh man, John Smoltz had like a horrible take. He's like, oh, you wouldn't catch me dead shagging balls with a cowboy boots on. And then he made that home run robbery play. He's like, I guess you could shag balls in whatever you like to wear. It was definitely a funny little going back between Smoltz and Arozarena. But Arozarena was just having fun, striking the pose, posing with Ohtani. It was just an awesome WBC for Randy Arozarena. And he really just took on a whole life of his own of being a lot of people's favorite players now. I mean, especially if you're from Mexico, I mean, I can only imagine that Randy Arozarena is your favorite player.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, what makes him such an interesting star and kind of a complicated star because, you know, again, it's WBC, but, you know, Mexico had a good WBC, and there's a lot of major league players on that team. It's not like, hey, he was the only one on there. It's, you know, all those, pretty much everybody in the starting lineup had major league experience in one way or the other. And, you know, I think talent-wise, you could argue that Mexico is not that far off, you know, from kind of the juggernauts like USA and Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. You know, so, I mean, I would say talent-wise, they're definitely probably better than like a Korea or Chinese Taipei in terms of major league talent. So I think it's like for him to really stick out, and it kind of makes you wonder, like, hey, if he can kind of have this role in Team Mexico, can he really even embrace it even more in Tampa Bay? Because I feel like he's kind of there, but I feel like, as somebody who's not necessarily a Rays fan, I don't feel like he is that guy, but maybe that changes. Maybe he becomes that guy, and it's a Randy Arozarena show, you know, from 2023 on.
Yeah, it's hard to say, too, because obviously they have players like Shane McClanahan, who's super well-liked in the Rays. They got Glasnow, who's a big superstar as well. Wander Franco, who's coming up and taking that. Like, they always have the prospects. They never hold on to somebody for too long to be their star. I mean, their last big star was who? Evan Longoria? Like, that was their big guy. So Randy, I think, could take a life of his own in Tampa Bay, but it's almost like not about him, and who knows how long he'll be there.
Right, and, you know, he has 3 years left of arbitration after this year. You know, it hasn't seemed like he's not the kind of guy that's going to settle for like a Wander Franco, like what Wander Franco did. Like, right. You know, he's going to want more. And, you know, he's 28 years old too. You know, I don't think the Rays are going to be like, hey, we're going to give a 10-year deal to a guy that's going to be 29 at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. But now we're going to do one of our favorite segments for when we talk about articles of a single player. We're going to compare them with people who have similar profiles and see who you like most for the rest of the fantasy baseball season. So we've got Randy Arozarena or Michael Harris II. Who do you prefer for fantasy baseball?
For me, I prefer Arozarena. And again, I'm just, you know, if you're just playing in standard leagues, you know, redraft leagues, you know, I always tend to favor, okay, which guy has the skill set that feels a little bit more safe, you know, especially in the outfield. You know, that was one of the things I just kind of felt as I went through multiple drafts was, you know, outfield dried up really quick, you know, and I feel like it was like, whoa, like I'm having to fill four, like multiple outfield spots. And by the time I'm getting to my third outfielder, it feels like there's going to be a lot of like question marks or a lot of wild cards. So for me, like, I'm not saying that Harris is a wild card, but there are some concerns, right? It's, you look at him last year, he had a strikeout rate of 24.3. You know, you look at his kind of, you look at his contact rate last year, you know, he had, you know, a 73.5% contact rate, but he had an O swing percentage of 41.7, which was, you know, almost, that was 8.3% higher than Randy's. So, again, he also had a 13.8% swing and strike rate. So, you know, those are concerns, and it makes you wonder, like, what's year two going to look like? How are pitchers going to adjust to him now that they have a year of tape? You know, how is he going to adjust? So for me, like, I'm going Randy Arozarena, though, you know, if you're kind of in those like net steals leagues, you know, like if you talked about, like, you know, obviously Mullins is the better play. I mean, Mullins only got caught twice last year, you know, for steals, you know, it's with a 20-2 mark, while, you know, Arozarena got caught 12 despite having 32 stolen bases.
Right. John, what about you, Randy Arozarena or Michael Harris II?
Yeah, I think for me, maybe this is kind of like the old crotchety baseball fan in me, but it's like, I don't want to trust a guy in his second year. You know, it's like the first year, I'm not saying he got lucky because Michael Harris clearly has some skills, but it's like Randy has at least a little bit more track record of delivering on a, you know, a 2020-ish season. And so I'm kind of more inclined to lean with Randy in this scenario here. Granted, he's only done it for two seasons as opposed to Michael Harris, who had a 19-20 season. So it's not like Randy has this much better of a track record, I guess. I think the other thing too, for Michael Harris is his walk rate, because it was a lot lower than it has been in the minors. And I think that's just kind of really abnormal for a rookie to have a better walk rate facing major league pitching than compared to when he was playing in the minors. I have that completely mixed up. He has a lower walk rate in the majors, which is what you would expect out of a rookie hitter. So he just won't be getting, you know, on base maybe as much as Arozarena would be, even with Arozarena's low walk rate. So I think I'm inclined to maybe go Randy here, just as a safer play when you're drafting your, you know, outfielder one or maybe your outfielder two, and then, you know, when you're in the baseball season. I just think I like to go with safer plays when you're dealing with high-end talent.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go with the clean sweep and also choose Randy. Now, it's funny because Michael Harris, I think in preseason, his draft stock was much higher than Randy's, like at least a round. So yeah, it's pretty remarkable to think that Harris was going maybe 10 to 12 picks before Randy, considering that Michael Harris really hasn't done it more than once. And I'm with John in this boat as well. John knows my philosophy on it. I really want to see you do it twice. And the underlying numbers for Michael Harris just didn't look that great. And I think the big thing here is if Michael Harris was leading off every day for the Braves with Acuna behind him, then Matt Olson, then Austin Riley, then it's a different story. But the fact that he's batting seventh or eighth, yeah, or sixth, like, his plate appearances aren't going to be that much. And I think it's going to be harder to repeat his run totals, his stolen bases when he's batting in that part of the order. So for me, I'm going to go with Randy as well. I agree with both of you.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. You know, I think it's like, you know, that the Braves are going to really look at Arozarena as a centerpiece of this offense. And yeah, and like I said, with Harris, you know, I talked about Arozarena's low launch angle. You know, Harris was even half that, and it's and he has even a higher ground ball rate. And what happens when the BABIP flips? You know, a 361 BABIP for Harris. You know, mm-hmm. will that flip? You know, in this year, even if it regresses, you know, 30 points, that's going to have a major impact, and he doesn't have as much value.
Yeah, right. Yeah, definitely agree. Now, second player, Randy Arozarena or Cedric Mullins? Kevin, kick us off.
Yeah, this one was tougher, and I guess you know you look at you know Mullins definitely had a down year. You're concerned about things like the barrel rate, you know, decline, and it, you know you're looking at obviously the home run decline, and you worry about that too with just the ballpark modifications. Though I think it hurts left-handed hitters less than right-handed hitters,
right?
But you know it's really interesting because you know it's you look at what he did. It's you know you barrel rate was in half, hard hit rate was kind of similar, and. What I love about Mullins is like he strikes out less, so he feels like a safer play. You know, when it comes to like walk to K ratios, you know, I think if you're looking at stolen bases, you're kind of in the same boat. He had 10 stolen, he was caught 10 times, though. It seems like he was a much better, safer run producer as he had 89 runs. You know, I think it's a coin flip, but I just feel like. The regression that we saw from Mullins from 2021 to 2022 kind of makes me more cautious rather than Arozarena. Well, we've seen more positive trends. You know, it's like there's only a 3 WRC plus difference for Arozarena. While with Mullins, it was a 30 WRC plus difference. So to me, like it's not so much that I think Mullins is that much better. But I'm not as fan of like a guy with that much decline from one year to the next compared to Arozarena, which had produced more of the same in 2021 and 2022, but in like slightly different ways.
So you are Randy Arozarena over Mullins for this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. John, what about you?
Yeah, I think I go with Randy as well. I mean, to me, it is kind of a coin flip. Like, their numbers are so eerily similar. Cedric's slash line was 258, 318, 403.
Yep.
And then you look at Randy's slash line was 263, 327, 445. So like just like a like you know 10-ish points higher in all those metrics compared to Mullins. 16 homers versus 20 homers, 34 steals versus 32 steals. It really could come down to a coin flip. I think maybe what makes me lean Arozarena just a little bit more is like just the power feels a little bit more consistent. Not saying that, you know, Mullins is inconsistent, but going from 30 homers to 16 homers, just isn't a great look. Maybe he could blame it a little bit on the changes at Camden last year. But it is kind of weird seeing that, whereas Randy at least consistently produced 20 homers 2 years in a row, and then, you know, 7 homers in a shortened season. If you extrapolated that out, you know, he probably could have gotten 20 in a full season there too. So I think if I'm looking more for a true power speed combo, I'm leaning more towards Randy just because the batted ball metrics are just a little bit better on his side.
Okay. Yeah. Well, for me, I'm going to be the outlier here. I'm going to choose Cedric Mullins. I think Mullins is just, for fantasy purposes, a better player. And the reason being for that is if his down season is 16 home runs, 34 steals, 258 batting average, sign me up all day long. Sign, if that's going to be my guy's worst outcome or one of the worst outcomes, let's say his worst outcome, which I think we can all get behind, is 10 home runs, 30 steals. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that because Randy, you know, the power, once again, we've never seen him eclipse 20 home runs. So let's say his worst scenario is 15 home runs and Randy's best scenario for steals is 30. But I think Mullins has more upside for stealing, especially with the base changes. I think the lineup for the Orioles is a little bit more exciting, actually, than the Rays, which I just believe in Adley a little bit more and Mountcastle and just the people surrounding him there. And I just think that Mullins for fantasy is going to give you more than Randy can give you. Now, Randy's upside, I would say, of like maybe being a 25-45 kind of guy is good. But Mullins literally went 30-30 in 2021. And sure, that might be an outlier for his whole career. We don't know yet. We've only seen two seasons out of him. But if you're going to give me a guy saying he's going to hit 15 homers, steal 30 bases, who's more likely to do that? I would say Mullins is more likely than a Rosarena to do that.
Yeah, I think that's why I like both Kevin and I think it's a coin flip. Because, you know, I think Mullins' ceiling is definitely higher. It's just, is he going to reach that steal?
Right. Yeah, no, without a doubt. I think it's a coin flip as well, and I'm going to go with the tail side and pick Cedric Mullins. Now, the last one, and this one's very interesting as well, Randy Arozarena or Adolis Garcia. Kevin, what do you think about this one?
This one was probably the toughest of the bunch because I think it a lot depends on your league. You know, if you're like in a standard five cat league where batting average, it's really hard to justify with Adolis Garcia. I don't know if he's going to be like a guy that's going to hit higher than 260. You know, I don't know if he has that upside just because he strikes out so much.
Yep.
His contact rate is so low. But if you're like in an OPS league or an OBP league, you know, it's, you know, OPS definitely looks better.
OBP is scary for Adolis.
Yeah, OBP is even still scary. So it's like, you know, it's like, so that those are tough things. At least a Rosarena can make those respectable, which I'm not sure Garcia does. But I mean, just the power upside. I mean, the power is legitimate. I mean, it's like you look at his hard hit rates, EV, launch angle, barrels. I mean, I think he's has the most upside of the three. The one question I do have is stolen bases. You know, you have a new manager in Bruce Bochy, and I don't have the exact stats, but, you know, growing up in Northern California and watching a lot of San Francisco Giants baseball and watching a lot of Bruce Bochy coach San Francisco Giants baseball, you know, he's not a guy that's prone to run with his guys. And that could be part of it, just roster compilation. You know, it's, you know, Brian Sabian didn't necessarily give him the guys to run, but you know, he stole 25 bases last year. Like, I'm not sure if he matches that under Bochy unless, like, Bochy changes. But, I mean, with that lineup, it's like, you know, he's going to have those RBI possibilities. I mean, he had 101 last year. So I like him as more an RBI play. I guess, like, if I had to choose, you know, if I'm looking for, like, a third outfielder, I'm going Garcia. If I'm kind of a guy that's like, hey, I need an outfielder that I can be more depending on, I probably go Randy.
Okay. John, what about this one?
I get irrational when it comes to Adolis, and I think he's so good, even though the some of the stats might not agree with me. I mean, the average is definitely not great. There is a lot of risk there, but I think what he gives you in counting stats, you know, RBI is obviously doing well. Their home runs, stolen bases, he's as good as any other fast guy, in my opinion. I just think, like, for me, if I can get, you know, let's just say four categories out of Adolis and, you know, discounting average, I think that's better than what I can get from Randy in those same counting stats. He's going to have, you know, more RBIs for sure. He had more runs last year. Stolen bases, obviously Randy had him by 7, but then Adolis had 7 more homers than him. Like, we know the power's legit for Adolis. We know he's going to get to probably 25 every season from here on out. So I think for me, I'm going to actually go with Adolis here.
Wow, that means I'm the tiebreaker, and I'm going to go with Randy Arozarena. And that's mainly because I play in a lot of OBP leagues, especially when I do money leagues and big money leagues. I play in a lot of OBP, so my personal preference, obviously, is that kind of format, and in that format, Randy's much better. But throwing all the bias away, if you're just in a standard 5x5, they're very similar, but I just think Randy's ability to steal is a little bit better than Adolis Garcia. Like Kevin mentioned, we don't know how much he's going to run with Bruce Bochy in command, and obviously, I like the Rangers lineup context a lot better. I think they're going to be really good this season, but Adolis can just go through a two-month rough patch where he's not hitting the ball at all, and not saying he's going to be replaced or sent down, but that could be a possibility with the slew of Rangers prospects that they have that can play at any given time. So I'm not saying he's going to lose his job, because I think he's well enough earned it across two seasons that he's played. But I feel like if he goes into a rough stretch, he could be benched or platooned or something. Like, that kind of scares me with that. Whereas Randy is cemented in his role and in his job, but Adolis just seems a little bit of a wild card in that aspect. But I mean, the stats have been phenomenal the entire time. So it's a tough call to make. I'll take Randy just because, mainly like Kevin said, the stability. I want someone, especially if you're drafting in the third or fourth round, I don't want to take a guy who has a bunch of red flag question marks, low batting average, low OBP. I don't want that kind of headache on my team. So give me Randy in that spot. If you're giving me Adolis like four or five rounds later, I'll take that instead of Randy. But if they're going around the same place, which Harris, Mullins, Adolis, Randy are all kind of going around that during draft season, then I will take Randy. But that wraps up the interview with Kevin O'Brien. Kevin, thank you so much for talking about your article, Randy Arozarena, Complicated Star, with us. We really appreciated it. Hopefully you had a good time. And before you go, make sure you tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me on and letting me just talk some, share some thoughts about Randy and those other players. And they can find me at on Twitter at Royal Report Kev. So capital R, capital R, capital K, Royal Report Kev. And you can find me at royalsreporter.com. And of course, you can find my work on Pitcher List for the Going Deep and Batted Box sections this year.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you again, Kevin, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Now, moving on to the MLB news since the last podcast. We start with some upsetting news from Atlanta. Max Fried was pulled with a hamstring injury. It's uncertain on when he'll return, but he'll most definitely need an IL stint, so not good for Max Fried. Tristan McKenzie of the Guardians had a right teres major muscle strain. He'll be on the 15-day IL, but will miss close to 2 months, maybe more. Justin Verlander of the Mets will also be placed on the IL with a low-grade teres major muscle strain, which is kind of rough. He said he'll still be throwing, and if it were the playoffs, he'd pitch through it. Now, the main difference here is I think Tristan McKenzie tore his, and Justin Verlander just has a little bit of a strain, but still, not good for a 40-year-old pitcher to have this kind of strain on his muscles. I mean, can't be a good thing at all. But hopefully Verlander's okay, for my sake at least. Kyle Wright of the Braves has right shoulder inflammation. He'll be placed on the 15-day IL. Joe Mantiply of the Diamondbacks also has shoulder inflammation, but the left shoulder. He'll be placed on the 15-day IL. James McCann of the Orioles has a left oblique strain and will be placed on the 10-day IL. Joey Votto of the Reds has a left shoulder injury and will be placed on the 10-day IL. Daniel Bard, this is an interesting one because I think it's a good thing, and he's been very open about this, but he was placed on the IL due to anxiety. He was actually out of the majors for 7 years due to having very bad anxiety and having the yips, and it affected his career. And then he came back and was strong with it, but I guess maybe because of the WBC and having that bad performance, maybe that brought it back and really brought the anxiety back to opening day. So very strange. Any comment on that, John? I mean, I think that's such a weird point. And I mean, obviously it's something that everyone deals with nowadays, and a lot of people are more open about mental health stuff. So the fact that someone went on the IL with anxiety is an interesting thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good thing to like kind of remove the stigma in terms of like, oh, just work through the yips.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Yeah. And so, and this is something that, you know, not every pitcher deals with, but a decent amount deal with. And so I think it's good that they're taking this approach. You know, just take some time, you know, get stuff figured out. And hopefully he's back and ready to play.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. I hope he pitches well when he comes back and kind of shakes that anxiety off. Bo Brisky of the Tigers has right upper arm discomfort. He'll be placed on the 15-day IL. Ryan Pepiot of the Dodgers has a left oblique strain, will be placed on the 15-day IL. Michael Grove will take his place in the rotation. Griffin Canning of the Angels has a left groin strain and will be on the 15-day IL. Jared Walsh of the Angels has headaches and insomnia. He'll be placed on the 10-day IL. Max Stassi of the Angels has a left hip strain. He'll be placed on the 10-day IL. And the most interesting part about that is that Logan Ohapi will take his place and was the opening day catcher. So a lot of good hope for Logan Ohapi because there's good rumors around him that he's going to be great. He's also from Long Island, so shout out to him because I'm from there as well.
Good for him.
Luis Urias of the Brewers has a left hamstring injury. His status is uncertain at the moment, so we'll have to wait and see on Urias. Adrian Hauser of the Brewers has right groin tightness, will be placed on the 15-day IL. Eliezer Hernandez of the Mets has a right shoulder strain. He'll be placed on the 15-day IL, and we might have just cursed him because apparently whenever we talk about anybody on this podcast, they get hurt, and I don't like it.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, sorry, Eliezer. JT Brubaker of the Pirates has right elbow discomfort. He'll be placed on the 15-day IL, and we also might have cursed him as well. So, sorry, JT happens. Brubaker. Yeah, it happens. That's our new motto. It happens.
You get talked about on the This Week of Fantasy Baseball podcast, and you get an injury. You know that.
Yeah, it's not good. People are going to start paying us to not talk about them.
Yeah, exactly.
Giovanni Gallegos of the Cardinals has lower back tightness, and he's day-to-day currently. And last but not least, Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals got hit by a 103-mile-per-hour Jordan Hicks pitch on his right knee while he was catching. He is listed a day-to-day for now. It is apparently okay, and it's just a contusion. So thankfully, I mean, that could have been way worse. So gladly, Wilson Contreras, the catcher that they got in the offseason, is going to be all right. So any comments on any of these injuries, John?
Maybe just a few more details about the whole Tristan McKenzie and Justin Verlander stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, according to Lucas Seehaver, he's kind of a guy who's on Twitter. He's a physical therapist, but he also does some Twins analysis. But he basically says that it's likely that Tristan McKenzie has, like, a much higher grade strain.
Yeah, right. That's what I heard. I didn't know if it was a tear or a higher grade strain.
Right, yeah. So, you know, the eight-week recovery kind of, indicates it's, you know, grade one or grade two. And then the Mets said that Verlander had a low grade strain, right?
Right.
So that's why he's able to kind of continue. So just a, you know, a bit for information about that, you know, why it's like, oh, they have the same injury. Why is one guy, you know, worse than the other? And that's kind of what's going on there. Obviously, I hate to see Max Fried kind of deal with that.
Yeah.
All of a sudden just pitching well and then just, never mind. I'm running the first base and I pull a hamstring. You know, it just happens. And
yep.
Yeah, other than that, you know, like, it's day one of Major League Baseball. People get hurt, so not too surprising here. Hopefully this list stays short for the rest of the season.
Amen.
But knowing how this list usually develops over the course of this year, there's a good likelihood that we're going to accidentally curse one of your favorite players.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about Chris Bryant yet, so that's shocking.
It's true. He's actually healthy, surprisingly.
Yeah, I hope he stays healthy, by the way. I don't want to jinx him at all. I hope he stays healthy, but yeah, right. We talked about him a lot last season.
So we're screwed.
Yeah. Uh-oh. But yeah, no, that's a great point on both McKenzie and Verlander. And it's funny because every MLB season, there's always a new injury I learn about that I've never heard of before. Like,
oh, yeah.
Right teres major muscle strain. Like, never heard that combination of words in my life.
What was it last year that DeGrom got hurt with? I can't remember what it was.
Was it a scapulus or scapula? I forget what it was.
Yeah, it was some weird injury. I just remember, like, oh, that's a thing? Okay, cool. And then, of course, then he was out for a season, so it wasn't that cool, but...
Yeah, we always get these random injuries I've never heard about, but it's, you know, crazy that two people have the same injury, but one's obviously a higher scale than the other. So
yep.
Hopefully Verlander and McKenzie both come back strong. But moving on to the transactions before we wrap things up here, the players optioned to AAA were Grayson Rodriguez of the Orioles. It's surprising since Baltimore's front office was saying he'd be on the opening day roster, but I think this is mainly a performance issue because unlike when some people say, oh, we need to see more from this guy and, you know, we got to keep him in the minors a little bit longer. Grayson Rodriguez is actually terrible in spring.
Yeah,
so,
it wasn't look good.
Yeah, they gave him every chance. And I think if he pitched well in spring, he was going to make the team. Like, I genuinely can say that would have been the case.
Mm-hmm.
But Grayson Rodriguez kind of did himself in there. So hopefully he'll be able to get stretched out a little bit more and pitch well and then make the team eventually. He'll be up this year for sure.
Yeah.
Christian Pache was traded from the Oakland Athletics to the Philadelphia Phillies. And the Philadelphia Phillies optioned him to AAA. What's crazy about this is Pache was like the main centerpiece in the Matt Olson trade from Atlanta. And just 1 year later, they got rid of him. And obviously, Esteury Ruiz in that whole deal, and they got him back and they want to give him a chance. But to think that you traded Matt Olson, who was an all-star caliber player that year that you traded him, to get one of this kind of caliber prospects as well as some other pieces, but then just 1 year later, you gave up on him completely.
Yeah.
Is kind of mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to A. I mean, it's kind of surprising how maybe poorly run that organization has been in the last few years.
Yeah.
Just thinking about how, like, there literally isn't anyone on their roster. I mean, like, Estuaries is, like, kind of fun.
Yeah, right.
Seth Brown is maybe, like, their only guy who's, like, consistently on, like, a majority of fantasy teams.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, fantasy and real life are a little bit different, but this team is just hot garbage.
Yeah.
And it's kind of tough to see because, like, you know, for a long time they've been, you know, really well-run MLB team. It's just for the past
Yes.
2 years, it's just been really, really terrible.
Yeah, they were a team you could root for because they spent very little money, but they had players like Matt Olson and Matt Chapman and Ramon Laureano, like just guys you can get behind that, you know, were good players, and they just gave good players a shot and it worked. And now it's just like a disaster. I mean, they're giving people shots still, but they're all like fringe players. So,
Those are people you shouldn't be giving shots
right,
to.
exactly. Oswald Peraza was optioned to AAA after losing the shortstop job to Anthony Volpe, which I'm kind of surprised by that, but also not because Volpe really earned that job. So,
It was a weird situation because Peraza was definitely the best better defender, but Volpe had a better bat,
yeah.
and so usually offense wins out because you can make up for the defense usually. So I mean, Peraza is definitely going to, you know, be up in the majors at some point this season. And so we'll see how that whole thing. And we're not sure Volpe is a sure thing too, right?
Yeah, right.
He did look okay on opening day, but you know, who's to say in 2 months that, you know, he gets optioned back to AAA and they bring Peraza back up.
Right, yeah, Volpe could be optioned. They could be doing bad in the standings and decide to trade Gleyber Torres halfway through and bring up Peraza. Like, there's so many different things that could happen that brings Peraza up or things move around. So, definitely could see him up soon. Brett Beatty of the Mets and Mark Vientos of the Mets were both optioned to AAA as well, which is upsetting to see as a Mets fan, but we'll see them eventually this season. And then the rookies that got promoted to the majors, the big ones at least, Jordan Walker of the Cardinals, Anthony Volpe of the Yankees, Blake Sable, and Bryce Turang of the Brewers, which are all pretty decently big names. I mean, Bryce Turang more so not for fantasy, more real life. Same with Blake Sable, maybe in the deepest of leagues that those two are viable, but Volpe and Walker are the exciting ones for fantasy.
For sure. And Walker is kind of interesting too because, you know, he's a third baseman by trade, but obviously they've got Nolan Arenado there, so he's playing left in St. Louis now. And you know, that's shuffled a few outfielders around in St. Louis. But we'll see how that all shakes out too for both Walker and Volpe. Sable, I think there was like a fun conversation in on the Discord today where I think Sable's like one of the few like left-handed left fielders in Giants history, or some, you know, something to the gist of that.
Right.
More or less they're like, oh, you know, it's nice that this guy made it up. We're not sure if it's going to work out, but hey, good for him. And then yeah, Bryce Turang, former first round draft pick, you know, big news to have him come up and join the team.
Yeah, for sure. But that wraps up everything for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you go, make sure that you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe, that's THEJOHNKE, and myself on Twitter at Regicidal, that's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on, and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you could join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week, opening day week. So exciting. It's great to be back into the swing of things. I'm so excited baseball's back. But we will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.